Shabbos and dealt with the issue of a short-term but somewhat predictable issue of infection. Then we moved into long-term, somewhat predictable sleep apnea, which we're going to finish up with this time. And then the other thing we have to talk about is where it's short or long-term, entirely unpredictable. And for that, we're using mental health situations as the example. And then, we'll do a quiz on that. If there's time after that, we'll start on the new topic of dental emergencies. I'm not so sure we'll get to that today, but if so, it's on the source sheet. So we could start with that. We'll have to see. I did investigate the question of doing Zoom for Monday's class. I was told, no, bad teacher, you're not supposed to do that. So, yeah. That may be, but there's an ethics thing. Yeah, ethics. So, yeah, there you go. So the answer is, be here in person. If I have to, then you have to. In terms of that first part, though, that we talked about, I did want to just revisit one point that I think is important to remember. We said that when you're dealing with an infection concern, just making note for myself on that, when you're dealing with an infection concern, we said that if you know you can wait, then wait. But otherwise, we have this fear when you're dealing with infection that bad things can happen. They can happen because of lack of treatment on Shabbos, where if you wait till after Shabbos, it's actually too late. Now the infection has set in and they're already at risk, depending on what type of infection we're talking about, what the person's state of health is. You need a lot of medical information in order to really know, and we are going to err on the side of caution. Therefore, you'll end up treating it as safe pikuach nefesh. But, and this is the key point that I wanted to add, taking care of these infections does not necessarily require you to do a de'oraisa. The fact that you would be justified, oh no, safi pikuach nefesh, therefore I can override a de'oraisa, doesn't mean that you actually need to. Because for these types of situations, very often the answer really is just clean out the wound well and disinfect it. It's not like you need to drive to a hospital. It's not like you need to light a fire. It's not, you know what I'm saying? The fact that you're justified in doing a de'oraisa does not mean that that's actually what's warranted in that situation. So that's something that I wanted to just, to make clear. You follow? Yeah, Danielle.
In what school of thought would it not be okay to clean the infection?
So, in theory, if you were talking about somebody who's generally in good health and had a tetanus shot, and what you see is just, okay, so they have a cut, so what do I need to do? Wash it with soap and water? Sure. But to do anything beyond that, to go to a store to buy bacitracin, or, whatever current thing they're using. Why would I need to do that?
You can use it if you had it.
If I already had it. So then you'll get into the smearing question, right? Can I dab it? Can I dab it and put on a bandage and let the bandage smear it? Like all the different methods that we've talked about. Can I say I'm rubbing it in and nothing is on the surface? I'm going to look for all the different, different aspects that I can find in order to say, well, this is a derabbanan at this point and therefore I don't need to worry. But that's the track I would take, is try to reduce, especially because when you're dealing with this, it's not time sensitive. If I don't do it this second, now they're in trouble. I can do it in the next hour and I'm okay. So that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to think it through and figure out how to do it in a way that minimizes issues. If it's liquid, I'm fine, yeah.
That's okay.
Yeah.
Not a tricky.
Yeah. Right, so liquid stitches was from the first semester, so that was a whole discussion. I'm glad to hear that, Bailey. You make my heart happy. She said she remembers it from first semester.
I don't remember the stitches that dissolve and the ones.
Right. So the answer is not so clear cut. Ava, the answer to your question is not so clear cut. Yes, Rebecca.
If you don't, this might be a really big stretch, but if you live near a store and you don't have fast tracing, would buying fast tracing be over on any
device? So theoretically, you can do it without violating a de'oraisa. It's a little tricky. The idea of buying it, straightforward, that's a derabbanan. and you're not dealing with an area where it's a Rishus HaRabim Del Raisa. You're not talking about walking through Times Square or something like that to buy it. So you can solve those problems. The issue of writing, if you're needed to sign your name to something, or if in some way you trigger the printing of the receipt, you know, maybe you write with a shinoi, push the button with the back of your knuckle, like, pay with cash, right? Assuming you actually still have that, yes, that could be a way to deal with it. But, like, there are these sort of tangential issues that come up. Okay. I wanted to get across that the fact that something may justify overriding a deraisa does not actually mean that that's what you're going to need to do in that situation. Okay. So we were dealing with the issue of long-term danger and sleep apnea as posing that long-term danger. We highlighted in particular cardiovascular danger. And what we said was that according to most poskim, according to the camp that we brought, which is really one camp, that's why I hesitate to say it's most poskim, it's Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach and his Talmidim. So the Nishmas Avram, Rabbi Dr. Avram Sofer Abraham, brings it. He's, Talmud of Rav Shlomo Zalman. So that school says that we look at this as Chol HaSheyesh Bo Sakana. This person is considered to be dangerously ill, even though the impact would not be known for a long time, and even though they're using the sleep apnea machine every other day. They're just not using it on Shabbos. Nonetheless, he's willing to call that Chol HaSheyesh Bo Sakana. Yes, Daniela.
They're using it every day, but not on Shabbos. They are using it on Shabbos.
No, if you were to skip it. In other words, the concern would be, if I were to skip it, I would be in danger. But if I were skipping it, it's only one every 7 days, plus Yom Tov. Make Aliyah, and you reduce that. Sorry. But that's the point. Therefore, they're in a Yesh Bo Sakana situation regarding its use on this day. Yes. The opposing view is brought by Rav Heinemann, but I have to say it's unclear what exactly he means. If you take a look at source number one, Rav Moshe Heinemann is the head of the Star K. I've mentioned him before, I think. Yes, I mentioned him in terms of the viscosity discussion regarding the soap. His methods are great. So look at what he has to say here regarding sleep apnea. He says, although untreated sleep apnea can lead to life-threatening illnesses, it is not obvious that the use of a CPAP machine on Shabbos would be permitted. This is due to the fact that any one particular night of sleep apnea may not be life-threatening depending upon the patient's condition, right? Go back to the categories that we said. We said category one, this person is in imminent danger. That's clearly not what he's talking about. This is due to the fact that, it may be that only the cumulative effect of many nights of sleep apnea may lead to life-threatening conditions. Therefore, for some patients, forgoing the use of a CPAP machine on any one Shabbos will not be life-threatening. But forgoing the use of a CPAP machine on every Shabbos of the year will statistically increase the risk of life-threatening ailments. Now they're skipping it 50 times a year. Is one allowed to perform a melacha on Shabbos for a condition which is cumulatively life-threatening? So his point is to say, I don't know that this day in particular is. Over time, it is. We had a similar issue. We didn't really spell it out this way, but we had a similar issue when we talked about the fact that you do standard treatments. You do whatever the normal standard of care is for patients on Shabbos. So every patient in the hospital, you're going to take their vitals, even though you took their vitals 2 hours ago, and it doesn't seem like things have changed, but that's the protocol that we observe. That's what Ramban told us to do. Why? Because if we stop doing it for everybody, somebody's going to get hurt. It's not like this person. I can't know that this person is in danger, but somebody's in danger. So that's like what we're saying here. I don't know that this Shabbos is going to be the one that's going to have the impact, but skip enough Shabboses, and it's possible that, yes, you have now caused a problem. So Rav Heinemann Shlita contends that a condition which is cumulatively life-threatening is certainly no less severe than a condition of incapacitating illness, which is what we call close. Chol HaSheyesh Ein bo sakana, right? Incapacitating illness, like you're bedridden, right? That kind of a case. So that's called chola she'ein, not you, somebody. That's called chola she'ein bo sakana. So he says, it's no less severe than a condition of incapacitating illness. Is he saying that sleep apnea is chola she'ein bo sakana? No. What is he saying? Right, it's no less than, it is similar to. He has invented a new category, is what it sounds like to me. He's invented a brand new category. He's saying it can't be less than chola she'ein bo sakana. It could be called chola she'yesh bo sakana, but he's not really prepared to go there. But he is prepared to say no less than chola she'ein bo sakana, and therefore you'll be justified in overriding Shabbos in the way that you would for a chola she'ein bo sakana. He says, therefore, a person with sleep apnea can certainly do anything on Shabbos, which would be allowed for a chola kol gufo, the person whose entire body is ill, the person who is bedridden, for which we said you're allowed to do what? Amir lakum an adel raisa, derabanan with a shinoi, and chai adam, quoted by the Mishnah Berurah, even a derabanan without a shinoi, correct. So that's what he is going to allow in this case. So you can turn on your CPAP machine with a shinui, right? Or you could ask a non-Jew to turn it on. And, you know, we talked about electricity potentially being a derabbanan in the first place. You know, that would certainly reduce the severity of what we're talking about. Clear? Okay. So talking practically about CPAP machines, where does this leave us? So the most basic problem involved with a CPAP machine is the issue of turning the machine on, right? Because electricity, Shabbos don't go well together. According to one view, which is a strong view presented by Rav Usher Weiss, turning on a machine could actually be considered like a de'oraisa. I use the word like a de'oraisa because he stops short of saying, yes, it's a de'oraisa. His concern is that turning on the machine is called a makeh bepatish. You are essentially, literally, yeah. But what you're doing is you're taking something that was not functional because it had no power, and you're making it functional. So he views that as like a deoraisa. That's an argument to say it's like a deoraisa. Other poskim, generally speaking, say no, it's a derabanan. So if you have somebody who's in category one, this is pikuach nefesh. That's the person who's in the ICU. That's the person who they could really be in danger if they stop breathing while they're sleeping. Do everything you have to do. Do not pass go. This is what you do. That's category one. Category two, on the other hand, according to the Nishmas Avram, is a pikuach nefesh situation. So therefore, while Shabbos is dechuya, we want to minimize, and you have the opportunity to minimize, so if you can do it with a shinoi, that's what you ought to do. But fundamentally, if you need to turn it on, then you're going to turn it on, because they held it to de'oraisa. For someone who's in Category 2 and following Rav Heinemann, or somebody who's in Category 3, so we'll say, use a derabanan with a shinoi where possible, or get a non-Jew to be the one to do it. Clear? Try. It won't be the same. So the person who's in category one, everybody says this is pikuach nefesh. Shabbos is dechuya, so if you can turn on the machine in an unusual way, that's, yes, better, but if you can't, you can't. Person is in category two, taking the view of Shlomo Zalman, Shabbos is dechuya, so we try to minimize it, but fundamentally, Shlomo Zalman says this is a pikuach nefesh situation. Are we clear on that? Rav Heinemann, on the other hand, will say no. You're justified in a derabanan, ideally with a shinui. So he will want you to use back of the knuckle to turn on the CPAP machine. Right? Let's say you tried to turn it on before Shabbos, but the power went out. And then when power went back on, and now the machine is off. So it's not going to revert to being on. It's going to be off. So what do I do now? So we'll say, use the back of your knuckle to do it. Use a shinui. If the patient's in category three, then they're definitely cholish ein bo sakana. They're definitely not in a deoraisa situation. The way we described category three last time was someone who might be in danger during the day because of their poor sleep at night. I don't even know if you call them category three. Like somebody who you're worried is going to fall asleep while crossing the street type of a thing. I'm not so sure what category to put them in. But we're going to try, according to Rav Heinemann on category two, to do it with a shinoi wherever possible. So that's what we would do. You know, the back of the knuckle solution, and that's what's generally recommended. Practical problem I mentioned last time. Yeah, Ray.
So we're saying that grade one, immediate survival, not even a question. Grade two, there's the different opinions, Rav Heinemann versus Rav Auerbach.
Yep.
And one says that Rav Auerbach says that you can just turn it off, and Rav Heinemann says that you should just shoot it.
Right. And Shlomo Zalman would really prefer that you use a shinoi also. Shabbos is still dechuya. So if you can, and there's really no reason you can't, then that's what you do. So here's the practical problem that I mentioned last time. Many machines will not blow air if they sense that the mask is not being worn. They need the pressure on the other side in order to go on. So that means when you put the mask on, you are activating the machine. It doesn't matter that the power was on before Shabbos. So the standard solution I've heard is turn on the machine before Shabbos, keeping the mask wrapped in a towel to perpetuate pressure. That's what you want to do. And then what you do is when you need to put it on, so you just pull off the towel and quickly put the mask on. It's not going to stop functioning in that interim, because just like with human beings, there are adjustments in the breathing. It's not going to sense that as there's no face on the other side. And then, the end of the night, you get up, do the same thing. You put it back in the towel. You could have it on a timer such that it just turns off when you expect to get up in the morning. But if you have a Yom Tov situation where it's Yom Tov into Shabbos, or outside of Eretz Yisrael, it's 2 days of Yom Tov or something like that, then you need it to stay on, so then you need to rewrap it. All well and good, but what happens if the towel falls off the mask? Right now, what are you going to do? So, so here you can go back to, okay, I need to put the mask on with some kind of a shinoi, right? Just like we said, push the button with a shinoi. So put the mask on with a shinoi. I don't know what exactly that looks like. Whether that's an actual option, like can you put the mask on with a shinoi? Like there's a band to hold it in place. Like what are you doing with a shinoi? This may be Chai Adam Mishneh Berurah situation where shinoi is not a thing. Like you can try, but it may not be practical. Are we clear? One other item. There are other complications, but one other item that I wanted to tackle because it teaches us other important halachos, and that is the digital readout. Modern CPAP machines often have a digital display that says, you know, how strongly the patient is breathing, how hard the machine has to work. And theoretically, like if you wanted to check and see, hey, how am I doing? You would be able to look at the display and get that information, which you are adjusting when you put on the mask and when you breathe into it and so on. So is that problematic? So I'm told by people who have these machines that on many of the models, you actually have the option of eliminating or deactivating the display, as well as, you know, any other LEDs that would go on. Like you're able to do that, I am told. I have never tried to. So, you know, speak to someone who's actually done that if this becomes practical. But let's say you don't have the option of disabling it. You're putting on the mask. The machine is now blowing air into you. You are now affecting the readout. So are you okay in such a situation? Sorry? So if I don't see it, it's not an issue? Is that a thing?
I would assume if you're turning it off, it's still reading it if you're just not seeing it.
So if I know, hang on one second. If I know, let's offer the following situation. I open the fridge on Shabbos. I see there's a light bulb that goes on in the fridge. I don't want to do anything with that. I don't want to turn it off now when I close the fridge. So I can just like cover the light bulb and then close the fridge?
If it
So, right, so garbhagatam will help you as far as cooking issues.
No, I know, like, I'm saying,
nothing with this.
I'm saying conceptually that, like, if you cover it, that you can't adjust it, or that you can't...
Right, so no, because the idea of covering something when you're dealing with Shabbos is talking about where you're not doing anything to the fire, and the fear is, lest I raise the flame, so I'm going to cover it, cover the controls, and therefore I won't accidentally come to do that. Here, you are changing the light bulb. By closing the fridge, opening the fridge, you are changing the light bulb. You haven't, covering it didn't do anything. Someone else had their hand up. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Leah.
Just like clarifying a question. When you were like saying before, you said you're allowed to check and see how you're doing? Or you
were no, I didn't. I said this is what the readout is for. Mm-hmm. That's all I said.
Okay.
So the answer is that you can be fine, and covering it is a piece of being fine. But we have to go through, like, what's going on here and why this would be an acceptable thing to do. Bless you. So, starting off, when you change the readout on the machine by breathing into it, what you're doing is not starting or stopping any new circuit. Meaning, the machine is already on. All the circuits are functioning. What you are doing may be causing current to increase or decrease, but that's about it. And Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach rules that that's not a concern for us. If you take a look at source number 2, Shmir Shabbos Kehilchasa quotes Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, talking there about a case involving an electric heater for a cushion for somebody who has a strong stomach ache. He says, "V'shamati me'agan Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, dim eino mosif lahadlik od chut o mechabehu." He says, "I heard from Rav Shlomo Zalman, if you're not adding another filament, you're not adding a wire that's being heated up, you're not extinguishing a wire that was heated up. The rak magbires hazer mamachlisho, you're just causing the current to increase or to diminish. Nira de'ein b'zeh shemisser, there is no prohibition involved in that." So Rav Shlomo Zalman says, that's okay. So number one, in changing the readout, I am not actually closing any circuits, opening any circuits. That's number one. Number two, breathing into a machine is not the standard way to alter electrical flow. That's not normally the way you would close a circuit, open a circuit, by breathing into a machine. What in the world am I talking about? Ray looks very perplexed. So it starts with Yerushalmi. Take a look at source number 3, Yerushalmi and Shabbos. Dealing with the issue of tzad, or tzeda, on Shabbos. Tzad is one of the 39 malachos. It is specifically not to trap things on Shabbos. You're not allowed to trap animals, birds, fish on Shabbos. A major halachic problem for people with pets, which requires a shaila to your rav, because people do this and they don't realize what they're doing. You're not allowed to trap things on Shabbos. So if something is in a space where, by closing the door, now it is trapped, you would be able to easily grab it. Now you have potentially, you know, violated an Isser D'Oraisa, a biblical prohibition. So the Rishalmi says, Rabbi Yossi b'Rabbi Bun b'Shem Rav China, Hayatzvi Ratz Kedarko. If a deer is running normally, it's just, you know, having a good time, Bambi's out there, V'niskave Lin Ol Ba'ado, and you intended to close the door of the house or of the yard or whatever it was for yourself. You weren't trying to trap the deer. Happens to be that there's a deer inside the yard, but you weren't trying to trap it. You just walked in, and you close the door behind you, because that's what you do when you walk in. But you ended up locking in the deer, even as you close the door for your own reasons. Mutter, he says, that's permitted. You follow? The Rishalmi says, even though the action that I did is a trapping action, I'm okay, because I did it for myself. So says the Rishalmi. The Rashba, commenting on this Yerushalmi, the Rashba is in Masechet Shabbos Bavli, but he says, the reason why this is okay is because you didn't mean to trap the deer. Some of you have learned Hilchos Shabbos on a pretty advanced level. Tell me why this Rashba is problematic. The Rashba says, I'm okay doing this because I didn't mean to trap the deer. Ava?
Isn't it not about, like, intention?
Why not? No, why not? You're right, but why not? Right?
People could possibly mistake it.
Nope. Ayala?
Don't you need to give up on this to not get
back? Nope. Yeah, Sarah says it. It's a psikresha. It's a guaranteed result of your action. We have a general principle on Shabbos that if you perform an action which is guaranteed to cause a malacha, it doesn't matter that you didn't intend the malacha, it's still asur. Right? We talked about the headless chicken, right? We didn't?
That's what it means.
It's a headless chicken, but we didn't talk about this? No. I feel like we must have. Okay. So I'll go through it very quickly.
Can
you take away the whole concept of shogig? No. But it takes away shogig where it's a guaranteed result of your actions. Or, let me, no, sorry, not even that. This is talking about where you do the action intentionally and just say, but that wasn't my goal. That's the point. In other words, in this Yerushalmi, it's not just that it's an accident that you locked in the deer. You closed the door because I'm closing the door for myself. There are zombies outside who are going to attack me, and I'm closing the door because I need to be safe from the zombies. Ah, but I'm also trapping a deer, but that wasn't my point. That wasn't what I was trying to do. But I want to go back and explain psikresha to make sure this is clear. And once you've heard the headless chicken, you never forget psikresha. The Gemara says that as a general principle, hang on one second, as a general principle, if you cut off the head of a chicken, the chicken is going to die. We have that on good authority. There is this one case of Mike the Headless Chicken, but generally speaking, that's the way it works. So, in the event that you cut off the head of a chicken and say, I'm not cutting it off because I want to kill the chicken. The reason I'm cutting it off is because my kid is bored. It's Shabbos, and he has nothing to do, and he needs a toy, and he's bored of all of his toys. So, I'm cutting off the head of the chicken in order that he should have... Look, you haven't been in that kind of a desperate situation yet where your kid needs something to do. Don't judge. So,
This never gets less weird.
Yeah. No. So, they lived in a different world. There were no battery-operated toys. So, the point is, you do that saying... As far as I'm concerned, I'd be happier if the chicken lived. I don't want the chicken to die. I just want to use the head. So because it's a guaranteed result that this chicken is going to die, when you do that, you're not allowed to do that on Shabbos. Even though that's not your goal, your goal is just to get the head, nonetheless, that's not okay. So the same thing is true here, or should be true here. You close the door, you are now locking in the deer. I don't care that you didn't intend to lock in the deer. You did at the end of the day. Rebecca.
But isn't it lo nichale?
So is it lo nichale? What makes it lo nichale?
Meaning that
so lo nichale, Rebecca points out that there are potential leniencies in certain cases that are called psikresha de lo nichale, where the guaranteed result is actually something you don't want to have happen. But you need to really not want it to happen. Not just, I don't want it to happen because I'm going to be liable if it happens.
I don't think anyone wants to trap a deer in the yard.
Really?
One thing if it's your own pet.
It would be so cool if I had a deer in my yard. That would be awesome.
It gets old very quickly.
Yeah? You think so? It's fun. Okay.
Like,
so maybe.
We have deer that look both ways before they cross the street.
Yeah.
They're so
many. Got it. Well, send some of them to West Hempstead. If it's really something that you don't want the deer in the yard, then maybe that's a conversation. Yes, then maybe that's a conversation. So the question is, what is the Rashba thinking? This is the Ran's question. The Ran in Masech HaShabbos, Lamed Ches Amud Aleph, in the Rif, challenges and says, it's Psik Reshe. Along comes Rav Shmuel Wasner, the Shevet HaLevi. And he gives us a very important principle, which I would wager most of you have used in practice at some point, even if you've never trapped a deer. Take a look at source number 4. Rav Wasner says, "Bechol malacha, for any malacha, o osa ha'pe'ula hamiyuchedes lemalachas isur kechoresh, O sha'osa pu'ulas heter sha'osa ima gam choresh kegreras safsal uchedome. He says, for every malacha, you either perform an action that is unique to that particular prohibition, like plowing. Right? In order to violate plowing on Shabbos, you have to actually plow. Or, alternatively, you perform pu'ulas heter, a permitted action, sha'osa ima gam choresh, which will also accomplish plowing, kigrera safsa luchadoma, like the case of the person who drags a bench on Shabbos and creates a groove in the ground. Right? You drag a bench on Shabbos, it creates a groove, so that's plowing. You didn't actually intend to plow, you intended to drag a bench, but you did create a groove. He says, in order for you to be liable for the malacha, either you perform the action that is known as that malacha, plowing, in his example, or you perform a malacha, which results in that. V'chein tzeda b'yadayim, and so too, trapping actively, o b'mitzuda, or with a trap, hi pe'ula miyuchedes litzidia, that is an action that is unique to trapping. That's why you do that. You do that in order to trap. Avon the ilas deles, but he says closing a door, hi pu'ulam muvhekes shel heter. Closing a door is clearly an act that people perform in a permitted context. Sha'osim beinim tzvi babayis beinim ein tzvi babayis. You close the door of your house all the time, whether there's a deer inside or whether there is no deer inside. Ve'ein heyos tzvi babayis mosif tosefes malacha on the ilas haheter klum. You don't do anything differently when you do it in a way that traps the deer. If somebody didn't know there was a deer in the house, they looked at a film of you closing the door to the house, they couldn't tell that you were closing in a deer. They would say, you're closing a door. That's all they would notice. Ve'alkein yesh chidush bazeh. So he says there is a novel idea here. Shene'ilas delas misyacheses le'inyan seida bichlal. It would be a novelty to say that closing a door is an act of trapping at all. Lachein svira le'laharash ba, didavka kisheyada shehatzvi babayis v'noal beso l'shem tzeida, da'az hechshiv ne'ilas delas l'pulas tzeida levad. He says the only way you're liable for closing the door and trapping the deer is if you know there's a deer in the house, and that's what you're trying to accomplish. Now you have changed closing a door into an act of trapping because you did it with that goal. But to be a biblical malacha, it either has to be an action identified with the malacha or you have to have kavana for the malacha. One or the other is required. Do you follow what I just said? I want to make
it
crystal clear.
There,
if you know it and you intend it.
You need both.
You need both, yeah. That's the way he frames it. Right? He didn't just say. He said, if you look at the last line in the Hebrew, Davka kishe yada shatzvi babayis, he knew the deer was in the house, v'nal beso l'shem tzeda, and he locked the door, he closed the door for the sake of trapping it. So he wanted both things, knowledge and intent. It's hard to have intent without knowledge. You can have knowledge without intent. So, the reason I say that all of you have probably taken advantage of this at some point is because this leniency comes up for motion detector activated lights. You're walking down the street and you pass somebody's house and the light goes on. Right? Yeah, it happens all the time. So, Rav Wozner advances the following idea. Walking through an area is not an action of turning on lights. This isn't how we turn on lights. We turn on lights by flipping a switch. You turn on lights by pressing a button. You don't turn on lights by walking through a space. So therefore, he argues that there's no problem for you in walking through there. Obviously, it would be better if you could avoid it. If you know it's there and you can avoid it, do so. But he says, like closing the door and you end up trapping the deer, walking through this area is not an action of turning on lights. Therefore, certainly on any D'oraisa level, it's not going to be an issue. I am now borrowing that, and then I'll take the questions. I'm borrowing that to say that the same thing is true regarding the digital display that you're not even interested in using. putting on a mask is not a way of changing, changing a readout of that's giving this information. So I think that that's important, and I think that will probably also help. I now go back to the point that we made before. What do you do if the towel fell off the mask, and now you need to put on the mask, but it's going to cause the machines to start running? The answer may be, yeah, but putting on a mask is not a normal way to start, electrical current running. It may be the normal way to start this machine. This is the way it works. You put it on. But maybe you can make that argument. Maybe. Okay, I saw a bunch of hands before. Rebecca, you had something? Yeah.
Yeah, but in today's day and age, meaning motion detector lights are so...
Yes. So the question now becomes, I'm not so sure in terms of motion detector lights per se, but because you don't walk into that in order to turn on a light. Even though they go on when you walk through, but no one says, I'd like that light on. I'm going to walk over there. Right, so this could come up in cases where this. I get this question, fairly frequently. Someone rents an Airbnb, and then they find out the only way out of the apartment, or whatever it is to turn on a light, and they don't have any control over that situation. So what are they supposed to do? So maybe this becomes part of it. As an ideal, you should avoid it, but maybe this becomes part of an argument for leniency. It's difficult. It's not a great situation. There were other hands. Ray?
Yeah, so I'm confused. This principle of the intention applies to the digital readout or when the towel falls off?
So, right.
Because they're already, if it's flipped on, there's already current running. And so by just placing it, the current just changes.
So this is a second argument for leniency regarding the digital display. The first argument for leniency is all you're doing when you breathe into it is modulating current. You're not turning it on or turning it off. That's number one. The current is already flowing to the digital readout anyway. That's argument number one. Separate argument is, even if you say that it is problematic for me to breathe into something and thereby adjust the flow of current, it's not a problem here because I'm not performing an action that is the action of the malacha of makevepatish or whatever it is that's involved in adjusting electrical current, because that's not the normal way that one adjusts electrical current. Ahuva.
If you know that the deer is going to come in, but you don't have, it's saying that you have to have the knowledge and intention.
Knowledge and intention, correct.
If you have one and all the other,
then it's correct. Then it's not an issue. Yeah, Sarah.
But aren't you intending for the mask to work?
You are intending for the mask to work, yes. You're asking me about the readout or about the airflow?
The readout.
So you are intending the mask to work, that is true, but you are not intending the current for the airflow. I'm separating these two scenarios. In other words, I'm talking now about a scenario where you had the towel on the mask and the mask was running the whole time. I have a different objection. My objection now is, but when you put the mask on, your breathing is going to change the readout. So is that a consideration? Okay. Process away. There was a hand on that side. No? Rebecca?
Knowledge and intent, so then the bench, like the actual action of full reach is a problem, but then also the bench is a problem.
So the bench is a problem where you make the groove via this action. What is he? I was wondering about it when I saw that. When I saw that he had this in there as well. So I think the way you have to read that is that there is some level of I'm not sure how to read it.
So I'm just confused about what the statement is. What's the
Right. His principle is the action, if the action you are performing is not the normal way to do, to achieve whatever malacha result, then you are, and it's not your intention to achieve that result either, then you're able to do it, even though it's a psig reshe. That's his argument. That you change a current, correct.
And your intention isn't really to change the current?
Right. You have zero interest in the readout.
So therefore it doesn't matter.
That's the argument, yeah. Yeah.
The issue with the readout is the changing of the digital. It's not looking at it, right?
So we're going to get to the looking at it in a minute.
Like, sometimes shows have TVs and stuff for the time.
So those are not an issue like this at all. Because you're not doing anything to it. You're not changing anything. You didn't start it. You didn't stop it. It was running from before Shabbos. It has nothing to do with you. It's just there.
The looking is not finished.
Correct. Okay. Correct. There's a separate concern when you're dealing with displays like that on Shabbos, not what we're talking about here, and that is the potential that it degrades Shabbos, depending on what they're using it to display. But that's a separate consideration. That's the Shabbaton discussion, which we've had separately. Okay. The third reason for leniency here, it goes back to what Daniela said before, which is cover it. And if you cover it, then yes, it's a guaranteed result, but it's a guaranteed result that you don't care about in the least. It's what we call lo ichpas le, not lo nicha le, you don't want it, but lo ichpas le, you don't care about it. And the precedent for this is found in a Gemara in source number 5. Tana Rabbanan, Brisa says the following. Hatolesh ulshin v'hamezared ziradin. If you uproot ulshin, form of plant, they get closer to Pesach and maybe an endive. For our purposes, it's grass. Don't worry about it.
Is endive not something to do with Pesach?
Sorry? So it's one of the 5 species that are identified as maror, potentially. Not the endive that you're familiar with from the supermarket here. That's actually a different kind of endive. Here it's marketed as chicory.
Okay.
Yeah. Which you can, if you've ever tasted chicory, you know, like, that's bitter. Those endives are not. Belgian endives, whatever. The whole discussion. Anyway, I translated it as grass here, and I'm going to stick with it. So if you were to pull up grass on Shabbos, if you were to cut shoots on Shabbos, im la'achila, if you do that because you want to eat it, so when did you violate biblically? Kigro geres, if you process the amount that is equal to a dried fig in volume. That's the minimum amount to be significant for eating. You're only chayav if you did a significant amount, which is volume of a dried fig. Im la'behema, on the other hand, if it wasn't for you to eat, it was for an animal to eat, so kimlo piagidi, so a goat's mouthful. Im lehesik, if you did it in order to light a fire with it, kdei levashel beit sakala, so the amount that you would need in order to cook a light egg. Im leyapos esakarka, if you did it not because you wanted to use the grass at all, you did it because you wanted to mow the grass, because you wanted the ground to look nice. Kol shehein, then any minimal amount you're already liable for. ... And then we get to Abaye. Abaye Omar afilu tema besade delav agam uchgon delo kamachavein. He says, even if it's in a cultivated field, not some agam, some meadow somewhere, uchgon delo kamachavein, where your intent is not to beautify it. To which the Gemara says, I don't understand. Well, in other words, let me say this differently. The Abaye says, this rule that says you're exempt from liability in the event that you don't do what you intended to do, you have no biblical liability. In other words, your intent was that you wanted it for eating. You cut less than a mouthful. You achieved beautification. Wasn't what your goal was, but it was what happened. So Abaye says, where you don't intend to beautify it, you intended to do something more, you intended to get something to eat, so you're exempt from liability even though you accomplished beautification. To which the Gemara says, I don't understand. Who cares that you didn't intend beautification? It's a guaranteed result. And therefore, even Rabbi Shimon, who says you're exempt from liability if it wasn't intentional, he agrees that in a psik reshe case, you are going to be liable. Hang on, I'm right in the middle. So the Gemara answers, lo, tzricha deka'aved ba'ara dechavrei. The answer is, it's talking about where it's somebody else's field, and therefore, it's not just that you're not trying to beautify it, you have zero interest in beautifying it. Whatever beautification happened wasn't your business. So it's called lo ichbas lei, and that reduces your liability. Yes, Bailey.
Really?
Okay. I will try again. The Gemara is talking about liability for pulling up grass on Shabbos, right? We know you're not allowed to cut the grass on Shabbos. Okay. It's telling me that mida oraisa on a biblical level, I'm only chayav if I cut an amount that's useful for my purposes. So that means that if I'm cutting the grass in order to eat it, right, these endives or whatever they are, because I want to eat them, and I cut less than is useful for eating, I'm going to be exempt on a de'oraisa level. I'm exempt on a biblical level. The challenge is, but you accomplished beautification, even if that wasn't your goal. Why are you not chayiv? That's a psik reshe. It's a guaranteed result that when you cut your grass, it's going to make the ground look nicer. So why are you not chayiv for beautifying the ground? That's our challenge. To which the Gemara's answer is that it's because it's somebody else's field. You have no interest whatsoever in beautifying it, and that will reduce the severity of what you're doing. It will still be a derabanan, to be clear, but it will no longer be a deoraisa. Because you have no interest in it. It's somebody else's field. You're not beautifying somebody else's field. Yeah. So.
No interest in the chicken.
If it was someone else's chicken, that would be so mean.
You're saying not to be mean, but like it wasn't your chicken, then you wouldn't be liable. You cannot be liable on a bill of rights level then, because you don't care about their chicken. Like.
So why does this? Why isn't this automatically the case of the chicken? Well, the same argument of lo nichale is that argument also.
Yeah, why is it? Like, I don't understand how super shy practically any case, because you're walking into your yard and you close the door because you just, that's what you do. And, like, you're not intending for the deer to be there, and you don't care. How is a regular super shy?
Right. Well, how is it ever not lo nichale?
Yeah, it is. Like, I don't care.
Right.
Like, I don't care if there's a deer in my backyard for a few hours until the next time someone opens the gate and they don't go out.
Right. I want to think that through, because I know the answer, and it's not sticking with me. So I'm going to come back to that, God willing, on Monday. This whole thing, this whole lo ichbas lei, is controversial. It's not straightforward. But if the whole thing is derabanan to begin with, then you can tack this on as another way to make things better in terms of the readout. Cover the readout so that you don't see it, and then you've now benefited because it's lo ichbas lei. It's something that has zero interest for you. That would be your third hand there. That would be the third idea. Oh, Huba, you had your hand up?
Yeah. So let's say you want the grass, but you don't want to cut your own grass. Do you want to cut someone else's grass?
So then this doesn't apply.
Literally.
Yeah, that would fall apart.
Okay.
Yeah, Rebecca.
Do you mind reviewing the different reasons why the mask
yeah. Right. So this is these are for the digital display. This isn't three reasons for the mask.
No, the readout.
Yeah. So reason number one is that all you're doing is changing a flow of electricity, but you're not turning it on or off. It's already flowing. It's flowing the entire time. All you're doing is, you know, affecting the level of electricity, but nothing else, which Rosh Shlomo Zalman says is fine. Second, breathing is not the normal way that we alter electrical flow. And then this third idea, that you cover it, you're not going to see it, so it's lo ichpas le, you have zero interest in it. Those are your three leniencies. There was a hand elsewhere. No? Okay. So it seems obvious to me that we're not going to get through the third of our topics, the unpredictable illness, in time to be able to do a quiz today. So what we're going to do is change of plan. I'm going to give you a break for 3 minutes, and then we're going to handle the third topic, and then we'll just start the quiz on Monday. That'll be the way we'll do it. Okay, so pause here for a few minutes. Breathe. Okay, let's do our third and last subtopic in this. Shh. Unpredictable illness, which could be dangerous already, you know, on Shabbos, after Shabbos, but it requires action today on Shabbos to prevent the problems. And the case I'm giving as our medical example is the case of mental illness. I sent out those messages, a while back, hoping that this is an okay topic for people. It's definitely an important one in terms of understanding medical halacha, Shabbos, and otherwise. So I wanted to first just show the level of concern that we find in our sources regarding mental illness, just with two sources, just to show that it is viewed as something of a high degree of concern. One is concern for self-harm, and the other will show concern for harm from stress. If you take a look at source number 6, this is a Gemara in Tanis. Originally, I was going to bring you Rashi on it also on the page, but then I decided against. So it says Rashi's commentary. Just ignore that. The Gemara in Tanis is talking about fasting for somebody on Shabbos. So, Yachid Shenirdaf Mipnei Nochrim. If somebody is being pursued by non-Jews, you know somebody is under attack. O Mipnei Listin, there are bandits. Mipnei Ruach Ra'a, or Ruach Ra'a. The Gemara does not say what Ruach Ra'a means there. Rashi will usually render Ruach Ra'a as Shedim, some form of spirit. However, the Rambam talks about Ruach Ra'a in a different way. Anybody know what the Rambam says it is? It does connect to Shaul. But not in the Rambam.
Wait, Ruach
Ra'a? Yeah. Isn't just having like a bad, like
so,
having like a cloud over.
So Ruach Ra'a, as the Rambam frames it, is what he calls melancholy. Depression is what he's talking about. The Rambam says this most famously in the Mishnah that we say in Bamem Aligin, right? It's the second parak in Shabbos, which we also say is Bamem Aligin on Friday nights, where it talks about extinguishing a fire, extinguishing a lamp, because somebody has Ruach Ra'a. So the Rambam says, this is talking about somebody who is experiencing some form of depression and they need to be away from people and they need to be out of the light. They just need to be in the dark for a while. So the that's potentially what Ruach Ra'a means over here, and that's why I'm using it in this line. So if somebody is being pursued by depression, Al kulan yachid rashay lesagef es atzmo betanis. In all of these cases, somebody else will be allowed to cause himself to suffer by fasting on Shabbos to daven for them. That's what we're saying. In the event that somebody is in one of these dangers on Shabbos, I am allowed to fast as part of davening for their health on Shabbos.
If someone else can fast for them?
Yeah, like davening on their behalf, you know, like what we're going to do tomorrow where we fast, have a fast day, right?
No.
You know, we fast as part of tefillah. Yeah.
I have two questions.
Yes.
The first is, does that not cause it? Like, I know that it's possible for depression to be caused by not taking care of your bodily needs. So
this is somebody else who is.
I know that person can get, like, if they have it, you never know. But, like, obviously, like, they're not symptomatic right now, so they're trying to take it over for the other person. But if they're not meeting their body's needs, their depression.
Yes. So in the event that there's somebody who we're talking about fasting knows that they have a weakness for that, then obviously they shouldn't do it. But your standard healthy person can go, you know, without eating and not have a problem. From a pure biological standpoint, most markers, you know, in a person do not change in a way that is catastrophic for at least 3 days of not eating. There was actually a study on this that came out just like 2 weeks ago. Obviously, if a person has health conditions that, you know, complicate matters, it's a different story. But generally speaking, you can actually manage, you know, fine. I think it was 3 days, was even without water, if I remember correctly.
Well, it's like 2 weeks without food, 3 days without water.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. So, yeah, that's the answer.
That's number one. Number two is, would you say that the under attack, like, do you think that we could do that nowadays?
That we could do what?
Like, fast when child is now, we can do it.
So, fasting as a form of tefillah, in other words. So, not as a result of October 7th, but if it's a tefillah for an immediate danger, in other words, you know somebody is fighting in Kanyunis or wherever, and this is part of a tefillah for them. You know, you have an argument to make. The question I would ask is, why Shabbos? You know, like, this person's been fighting in there for weeks. Like, why am I fasting on Shabbos? So that would be the question to ask. You know, there is a whole halachic discussion about fasting on Shabbos for particular things. So, for example, somebody has a dream Friday night that is terribly frightening and upsetting to them. So they want to daven and do tshuva, and they want to fast as part of that, and they would actually be miserable if you told them to eat, because they'd be worried, what about, I dreamed that so-and-so got killed, and, you know, I can't eat knowing that. Then there is room for them to fast, and then they have to fast on Sunday to atone for the fact that they fasted on Shabbos, because fasting on Shabbos isn't good. So they have to fast for their fast. That's correct. Yes, Rebecca.
What would the general
The only thing that we know from this Gemara is somebody who is at risk for self-harm because of their rach ra'a state, and somebody else says, I want to fast for them. That's part of my tefillah for them, is to fast. Yeah. Depression is the one that I'm using. I don't understand the question. Yeah. Oh, that's what you're asking. So this is unpredictable, short and long term. Yeah, that's what I'm using. Now I understand. Yeah, this is, I don't know if they're in danger now. I don't know if they're in danger a week from now. I don't know if they're in danger a year from now. I know that this condition is a volatile condition that has the potential to be life-threatening. That's the idea. We also have concerns about harm for people from stress. And here I bring you an example, which is an interesting one, not to show that it's a life and death thing, but just to show overall that there is this level of concern for people due to the results of stress. Ramban is talking about the issue of chatzitza. We know that when somebody goes to mikvah, they're supposed to make sure there's nothing on their skin, nothing separating them from the water. So Ramban says the following in source number 7 in his Halachos of Nida. He says, "Umidine ha-chatzitza, among the laws of chatzitza, or within the laws of chatzitza, lo tov heyos ha-adam machmer yoser midai. One should not be overly strict. Umechapes achar hasfekos lipsol tefilasa bedavar akal, to go looking for doubts. Well, maybe it really wasn't good because of such and such. Ki im kain ein ledavar sof. There would be no end to this. Lo yachnis adam rosha b'sveikos hachamuros asher ein lahen keitz b'sof. One should not put his head into serious doubts, which are interminable. He is worried about the stress that comes with it. I really should have brought the full Ramban, which says it more explicitly. But he's concerned about people creating anxiety for themselves, bless you, as something that is bad for them. So how do we deal with these kinds of circumstances on Shabbos? As a general rule, if there's a reason to suspect danger for somebody as a result of not taking care of them on Shabbos, we are willing to call it safek pikuach nefesh. So I gave you a couple of illustrations. One comes from an excellent sefer called Nafshi B'Sheilati. It just came out last year. Very useful. If anybody's interested in mental health in halacha, this is a good resource. Nafshi B'Sheilati. It's in source number 8. It's the heading there. Rabbi Yonatan Rosenzweig in Eretz Yisrael wrote it. He says, he's talking here about art therapy on Shabbos, or writing on Shabbos. And he says, Ksiva ot siur, writing, drawing, hey malachas ha'asiros min ha'torah. These are biblically prohibited malachas. V'alkein ein lahem heter b'Shabbos. And normal course of things, they would not be allowed on Shabbos. Ela im heim misayim ba'ofen kol shehu l'tahalich havra'aso shachol l'shiyesh bo sakana. Unless they are helping in some way in the recovery process of somebody who is dangerously ill. In parentheses, he says, Kach lemashal, for example, Yeshna mikrim shal anashim ba'alei nitiyot ovdaniyot. He says there are people who have suicidal inclinations. Velorak machshavot ovdaniyot cholfot, not just like a passing thought, which in the course of human life happens all the time, but they're actually inclined towards this. Uchagon elu asov lim me anorexia shetofa'a zu yidu'a etzlam. And he gives you as an example people who are suffering from anorexia for whom this is a known phenomenon. Shirak haksiva o hatziur dochkim mehem machshavos elu. Where only writing or drawing help them to push off those thoughts. So that for them, drawing or writing are actually life-saving activities. So he says that would be a case in which it's justified on Shabbos. Clear? Got it? Okay. Another example of this, I brought a Yom Kippur example as opposed to a Shabbos example. Regarding fasting, we already saw that line from the Brisker Rav about fasting where it's going to affect the guy's health years down the line. But take a look at number 9 from Rabbi Yehuda Leib Graubart in the Sefer Chavalim Bani'imim. Avalnira de'ein misham raya lahatir kadeshalo titrov daito. De'sha'ani hasam shucholech, ha'ishin shem etitrov daito yizgaber cholyo v'yavoli de sakana. I really jumped in the middle in this source, so let me give you maybe a little bit of background. He's referencing a tshuva in which it was said, you have somebody who is ill, that person has some kind of mental illness, we're not given the specifics, and he's told, don't fast on Yom Kippur because that could throw you off, like what Daniela was talking about before. It could throw off your equilibrium. So he says, in the case that they were talking about, there in fact was somebody who already had the illness, and therefore we were concerned that he might, you know, become irrational in the event that he fasts. Then he might be endangered. But if the person is generally a healthy person, and now I'm going to worry that maybe he's going to get thrown off, and he will lose his sanity, he'll become irrational. Ein matir nafilu is a derabanan. I'm not going to allow even a derabanan. It's specifically where the person has been ill before that we're going to go this route.
Isn't that just
where the person has been ill before. Yes. Where the person's never been ill, And it's just, you know, fasting can have that impact on some people. We're not going to now, you know, tell them don't fast. It goes back to the question of how broad, you know, do we go when we say safek pikuach nefesh is pikuach nefesh, you know, safek is a big place. What are you willing to include? So he says they have to have had the illness before. Which brings me to the last set of sources that we have here, which are exactly that. The question of maybe it's going too far. They're talking there about a case of abortion due to a threat to the mother's mental health. And what I think we're going to have to do, because it's 11:39, is start with this, God willing, on Monday. What a way to start a class after Purim. Sorry. But we'll start with that. We'll have the quiz on what we did on Monday, what we did today. And then after that, we'll start on dental emergencies as the new topic. Okay? Thank you. Purim's.